Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Hockey in the Classroom, episode 30. Always with you, Wally Walasek, out of Chi-Town, down to in Big D. Tony, what's going on?
Man, not a lot. It's crazy that we've gotten to this point. And, I mean, tip of the cap to, you know, all the teams around the country that made this year happen.
Yeah, for real. I can't believe that the season has finally come to a close. I'm happy, though, that we got to the final game, unlike last season because of COVID. So, big hats off, stick taps for everybody in college hockey that got it done this year. And then, but also out east, Brian, what's going on, brother?
Well, I'm really sad that the college hockey season has ended, but you know what? We're already looking forward to next season.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of shocked that the season has come to an end. But for me, this is every hockey season. I say this at pretty much at the end of every season that I'm like, wow, this went by real quick.
That's a good point. You look back, and go, wow, that was a full season, and then it's like, and we're done.
Yeah, exactly. In blink of an eye, you're already at the playoffs, so it's crazy. And I always hate that when the season ends. But yeah, I mean, get something to look forward to, I guess, come fall.
There you go.
Before we know it.
Exactly. But guys, last time we spoke, we were heading into the Frozen Four here. And as a recap, we had UMD taking on UMass and Minnesota State taking on St. Cloud State. Real quickly, we had UMass and UMD go to an overtime game, and UMass got the better hand of them in a 3-2 game there. And then St. Cloud State gets the upper hand against Minnesota State 5-4. That score, I think, says less about that game for St. Cloud State than I think it should be. I guess I'll just jump right into it and say it just because I said, you know, brought that up. I thought St. Cloud State really dictated the pace of that entire game for against Minnesota State, especially right out the gate. Minnesota State really looked like they were on their heels. St. Cloud State really played a good neutral zone trap on the Minnesota State forwards, where I think Minnesota State shines. The Mavs really use like their speed and like to bring the puck in. And I think Barry Melrose mentioned a couple of times, they got to just start dumping it in and chasing after, which is not really their offense. St. Cloud State really smothered them right out the get-go. And then the offense, which we've known not just this season, guys, but the last few seasons, this is an offense from St. Cloud that can fire on all cylinders. And they threw everything at one of the top goaltenders in the nation and got the better hand of him.
Yeah, what an incredible game this was.
And I agree with you, Matt. You know, I looked at the score. I was like, wait, it was 5-4. It seems like forever ago that the game happened, but that was such an incredible game. And
what a comeback by Minnesota State and what an ending by St. Cloud State.
But I think you're right. You know, the better team in that game came out victorious.
Yeah. I'll say this too, this was the score I kind of like anticipated. I thought this was going to be a one score game. I thought if anything, I mean, I had Minnesota State beating St. Cloud in this one. Really because I thought the goaltending matchup would have been the difference maker, but it ended up being kind of a difference maker. It was just flip for me. It just, you know, it was one of those games where I'm watching it. I'm like, Minnesota State, let's help, you know, McKay out here a little bit. Like, you know, the goaltender can only do so much in a game to keep you in it, right? And you need to start generating offense. You need to start getting the puck out of your zone. And St. Cloud State's forecheck was relentless through two and a third periods. I would say it kind of backed off a little bit, looked like, in the third period towards the end. That's when you saw Minnesota State really trying to make a charge back here. And then St. Cloud State was really good at helping their own goaltender out, getting the puck out. I mean, you know, the Mavs were one and done in the O-zone. That was killing them. You know, you just can't expect to win games when you take one shot and then all of a sudden you're going back on defense.
No, absolutely not.
But it was a hell of a game. Regardless, both schools played a hell of a season this year. you know, a lot of talent on both sides that we'll see at the next level for sure. But let's switch it over to UMD UMass. This is a game that I was a little bit more surprised by a 3-2 score.
Yeah, and I thought, you know, when
UMass was without some of their, you know, without some players due to COVID, I thought, okay, I think this is Duluth's chance. And I'm with you. I expected a little bit higher scoring game.
Yeah. With all the COVID stuff that was going on in this game, and it wasn't just UMass. UMD didn't have one of the 12 Brzezinskis, I think, in the lineup. That family just keeps pumping out kids. I just don't get it. So I thought the COVID thing wasn't going to play as big of a factor, I think, in this game. But I thought this was, like you said, Tony, I thought, you know, UMass is losing more on the ice starter-wise than UMD. You would think after playing a great game against North Dakota, you're running high on all cylinders here. You took out the number one projected team to go to the championship and win it all from day one, maybe even going back to last season. And I'm wondering if maybe that possibly got the best of them. And not to say that UMD didn't show up. This was a good back and forth game, but I thought UMD would have really come out. I thought this could have been a 2-goal game with everything that happened, COVID and all this jazz that, you know, happened off the ice. But UMass really, I think they showed a lot of doubters that you can get it done with what's, you know, usually sitting in the rafters too. And, you know, hats off to that whole recruiting system they got going. Not a single guy from the state of Massachusetts on that team, which is incredible. And, just the way they recruited European guys, you know, North American guys all over, and they collectively put together this team that, I mean, a lot of speed on both ends of the ice, defensively, offensively. You know, and I thought throughout the whole season, guys, I thought maybe goaltending was a little mediocre, but I thought they had really good goaltending in the championship game.
Yeah, and, you know, I think you have to give hats off to Matt Murray in this game.
I mean, Matt Murray made 34 saves in regulation. And I mean, when you look at the shots, UMD dominated them. I mean, at the end of regulation, it was 36-15 in shots on goal.
UMass came out after
overtime firing. And you know,
they outshot UMD
by about 11, but I mean, hats off to Matt Murray, because if he doesn't play the way – and, I mean, I don't even think he was supposed to be the starter if it wasn't for COVID. And he
– essentially helped him get that national championship.
Question for both the – you know, I guess I'm just kind of thinking out loud here. With regards to UMass announcing – I don't think it was right before the game faced off, but a day or so before, just from a – thinking out loud standpoint, do you think that whole with those players missing the semifinal game due to COVID issues, do you think that was maybe bulletin board material for Duluth and maybe they just didn't capitalize on it? I don't want to think so because it was such a close game and it went to overtime, but I don't know. Do you guys have any thoughts on that?
I wouldn't think so. Maybe they
underestimated Murray a little bit in net. But I mean, when you look at it,
they're putting
the puck on net.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough one. I mean, I'm going to look at this from, like, possibly a coaching perspective, and I want to say if you're a coach, you're hoping this isn't the case, because even though you don't know what to expect from a team you haven't played all year or played in this conference all year, non-conference-wise, you shouldn't take anybody lightly. COVID, not COVID, injury, no injuries. Duluth should have came in thinking every guy, and this is just my perspective, they should have came into this game thinking every guy in that roster, whether they were a starter all season or a backup all season or sitting in the rafters all season, UMD should have taken that as these guys are fucking all-stars because you just don't know what you're expecting, because you don't know how deep the recruiting level was with UMass. And even from like people that are like myself sitting here watching this on TV, you don't know how deep this recruitment went. But we saw it in the Frozen Four and we saw it in the national championship. It's deep. And they got a lot of young guys and a lot of talented skill guys. These guys just grinded out the whole year, kind of flew under the radar because, you know, none of them were big names like a Cole Caulfield or Jack LaFontaine, you know, those type of guys who really stand out from their program. These were just a bunch of guys from different pieces across North America and Europe that UMass said, you know what, we'll beat BU, we'll beat BC at their own game, but with guys outside of this state, we don't need to recruit within this state. We can do it without that. I think that's the most impressive thing from my perspective with UMass, is that they're not even trying to contend with the two biggest schools in their own state to recruit.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's always about
finding the right players, right? I think doing that, you get the guys that fit the system. I mean, we know Ben Barr is an incredible recruiter.
Yeah, I mean, us three were Western guys, and I thought the coolest thing from the national championship, and we'll, you know, I guess we're going to move towards that, which is UMass versus St. Cloud State. You know, we had two former Western coaches, assistant coaches, go head to head as assistant or associate head coaches for both sides of the school that national championship game. So I thought that was pretty cool. Coach Sheak and then Ben Barr, who all both coached together at Western at the same time. So that was pretty cool to see from a Western Michigan standpoint. But, you know, then we move on to the national championship, guys. And I don't know how you guys felt about this. I was a little disappointed, to be honest with you. And mostly with St. Cloud State, it just the first maybe 5 minutes, I think, are the most important minutes you got to play, especially against a team you don't know. And St. Cloud State just wasn't there for 5 minutes. And maybe even the first period, it was crazy. UMass came out ready to go right out the gate. And if I could have watched warmups, I bet I would have said, wow, look at these guys are taking warmups pretty seriously. St. Cloud State, I just don't know what was going on. It's almost like they, you know, they used everything up in the semifinal games. I was a little disappointed in the national championship that this game ended up getting blown out pretty significantly and kind of early.
I think that was kind of the way I looked at it. It was just right away. It was just all UMass. It's like, oh boy, like it's kind of we're looking forward after two fantastic games on Thursday evening. Thinking Saturday, okay, we got the two best teams left. Let's see what happens. And then it was just sort of, I don't want to say it was a dud, but it was a dud for St. Cloud.
Definitely wasn't a dud. I mean, there was a lot that was going on, but you would have thought, I mean, at least my perspective, like you said, Brian, we had two extremely close games, both in the semifinals. You would think this would end up being a close game in the championship, and it was a complete polar opposite. It was just, and St. Cloud had their chances. I mean, the amount of power plays they went on, the rushes they were able to get pucks on that. I mean, again, UMass goalies and defense standing on their heads and shutting them out. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, and I think, you know, almost the
dagger in this game, I think, happened early in the second when, you know, you're, what, 5 minutes into the second period, you're down 2-0, but you get that power play and you score one, and all of a sudden this game turns around. But then you give up that shorthanded goal, and I think that's when, you know, the white flag was kind of thrown in.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking. When I saw, and I mean, that might have been one of the sickest toe drags on a shorty I've ever seen.
Yeah, that was nasty.
That was just so freaking sick. But yeah, I mean, I'm kind of with you, Tony. I mean, when they did that, I was like, I mean, yes, it's 3-0, and there's still more than half the game left to go. But I'm like, I just don't see this possibly happening. I mean, the way I kept thinking was like, you got to get one quick before the second period ends and go down two goals to mentally have a chance. But then UMass gets a, gets their second in the second period. They go 4-0 heading into the third. And I don't know if you guys caught it, but like I caught it. They showed the tunnel for St. Cloud State, and they were saying, you know, one every 5 minutes. And I'm like thinking, if they couldn't get one in in freaking 40 minutes, how are we going to get four in every, you know, in 20? This is, and not to say that this team couldn't do it because they got enough offensive talent, but, you know, this is the point of the game where I'm like, we're going to start seeing guys try to do too much by themselves because they're frustrated and they're not going to, they're going to get away from the system that they probably had in place. And that's, I kind of saw that. They saw a couple guys trying to dance their way through, you know, the defense themselves. You know, at times I thought, okay, they got something going here. They got pressure. They got the offense. They're cycling. Here we go. Let's get a couple shots. But then you go, then you look at UMass, the defense blocking shots, the goaltending was outstanding. You know, here, you know, it's, you know, you get, this is where you tip the hat to UMass that they just played that incredible in the national championship.
And sometimes it's just meant
to be. You know, when you look at UMass in that game, they were so close, I guess, the last national championship in 2019. And,
you know, you thought this team, this might be it, like that team of
destiny. You know, you have the COVID cases, you beat, you know, the back-to-back defending state champions in over, or national champions, excuse me, in overtime.
And then you come into this game. I'm not really surprised
now that I really think about it. And I'm going to say this. I would say that St. Cloud to me was the surprise team of the year. I mean, if you would have told me at the beginning of the year that St. Cloud State would have been playing for a national championship, I really don't think I would have believed you.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. And I mean, Tony, I know we did in our first episode, probably, I think we kind of projected each conference where we thought each, I don't know where both you and I had St. Cloud State in the NCHC and all that, but I think we had them kind of middle of the pack. If I had a really guess, I mean, I would have to go back and listen and look at some notes to see if that's valid or not. But I don't remember having St. Cloud State, for myself at least, one of the top teams in the NCHC this year. So, yeah, I mean, I'm with you to say that, you know, back in whenever the season kicked off, beginning of October, end of October, whenever it was, hey, St. Cloud State's going to go to the Natty. I would have looked at whoever said that and said, okay.
Yeah.
Good luck. yeah, and that's not to say anything bad about St. Cloud State. It's just, you know, when you have Duluth, who's two-time defending champs, it's still recruiting well. And then you got North Dakota, who, you know, for all we know, this could have been their destiny last season. If you know, COVID didn't stop right before the playoffs, you know, I don't know. But North Dakota was the top team again last year. So, I mean, when you're looking at those two teams and then Denver, who has been one of the top three teams in the NCHC the last four seasons, it's, you know, again, nothing against St. Cloud State. It's just, you know, there's a lot of – there was three other teams also, you know, you're looking at going, well – they've also been better than St. Cloud the last how many, three seasons? So, sorry that we would pick them before you guys. but, you know, this is now, you know, this is where I was also thinking about this midway through the game. You knew at some point the NCHC run for national championships was going to come to an end at some point. You just didn't know what year that would have been. So, you know, here we are. The NCHC reign is now this – doesn't mean that the NCHC is not the best conference still in college hockey. I still would think they're the toughest. And pretty sure Barry Melrose made a really salty comment that I saw a lot of people roasted him on Twitter about, including myself, about, I think it was the WCHA being the toughest hockey conference.
I've felt for years that I'm good with Bucci calling it. Like, Bucci loves college hockey. I'm all in for it. Personally, if there was a duo that is doing these games, I think it should be Ben Holden and Dave Starman. But that's neither here nor there. Like, I just don't think Barry Melrose, no, he's an NHL guy.
Yeah, but you've got tons of college guys that can come in and do color commentary, including Dave Starman, who was doing on the radio feed.
If you put him and Bucci
together, there might not be two more knowledgeable. I mean, maybe Brad from the Grand Forks Herald, but you might not have two more knowledgeable guys when it comes to the game of college hockey.
Yeah, I mean, I would even go as far as, again, this is probably more political than we even know about. But, I mean, if I had – obviously, I would love to have Dave Starm because I agree. I mean, no one follows college hockey more closely than he does. I mean, not only is he calling games, but the guy is a scout for NHL teams in the college ranks. So, I mean, if you want someone, an encyclopedia of college hockey – he's got to be your number one guy. But, I mean, you even look at guys who've played college hockey that work for different networks. Anson Carter could do this game. Patrick Sharp, who's now a color commentator playing at Vermont years and years ago, could have done this. I mean, you could get a lot of different people that have played college hockey, men and women, in that seat. But, again, I think this is a political thing from, ESPN – they've stuck these damn two guys together for so long that, I mean, until Barry Melrose really shoots himself in the foot like he did, I think, over in the NHL Network, they're not going to get rid of him, which is kind of sad because I'm with you. I think I agree. He's an NHL guy. I don't specifically think he follows I think he follows college hockey. I don't think he follows as closely as others do that could probably fill in that seat a little bit better than he does.
It was really nice, though, throughout us. The only very small positive thing to segue off the bashing ESPN too much for it, but I did enjoy throughout, it wasn't all the time, but certain breaks they were going to, intermission breaks, playing that classic NHL Tonight music or NHL and ESPN music. Oh, that was beautiful. I think back in my college days, that was whenever either you guys called me or text me, that was my sound I had, ringtone for you guys. So it's like, nostalgia.
I wonder with the ESPN deal now in place for the NHL, if we'll see Barry Melrose kind of dwindle off to the professional side, and maybe they'll backfill him into the college ranks next season because he'll have his hands full with the NHL
now. I think that's 100% so. What's going to happen.
So, this could be our last Barry Melrose conversation, college hockey.
And, I'm going to be honest, too. Like, sometimes I don't like his voice. And he's almost got that, old school mentality in it.
Oh, yeah, he's very old school.
I like it. I know Brian and I go back and forth on this one with baseball. Like,
let's stop trying to, think about the good old days,
and I'm using that in quotes. Like, we have to grow the sports, and old talking heads like that aren't going to grow the sports.
Yeah, I agree. And you can tell too when you're listening to the game, and a penalty occurs in college hockey. Now, for people that may or may not know, the rules from the professional and college slightly different in different aspects. A lot of the same, but some are different. And you could tell when it comes to, how many times have we had conversations about the refs just love to be whistle happy in college hockey? It's ridiculous, right? So there's a lot of penalties that get called. National championship and the Frozen Four, great A examples. There's a lot of power plays in those last three games over the weekend. And he makes those. There was one he made a comment where it looked like it was an elbow to the head. And, I think even in the NHL, this would have gone either way, depending on if they make the call or not and, if they're going to review it or not. But right away, he makes the comment before they kind of looked at it from a different angle and showed really the elbow didn't get him in the head. They were basically going off the reaction. I don't know if you guys know which hit I'm talking about in the national championship in the corner, but he kind of was like, well, it looked like a clean hit. And I'm thinking to myself, it's just, 15, 20 years ago when you were crappy, coaching terribly for the Lightning, yes, that would have been a no-call, no-brainer. But that's just not hockey in general anymore. I mean, hockey has moved away from the you know, beat the shit out of you, enforcers, intimidating, all that cheap shots. It's really gotten away out of the game, and the game has evolved into speed, skill, puck moving, shooting. I mean, it's just, that's just the evolution of the game in general. So yeah, I'm with you. I think he's still stuck in his old 1990s, early 2000 ways when he was coaching, and he's, I think maybe he just has a hard time letting that go, that that's not hockey anymore.
And, you know, I love Doc
Emrick. I, you know, the voice of hockey to me,
but I always felt
the same way about Doc, like this, you know, listening lately,
he was just losing a step in his
calls. And I mean, yeah, that's going to happen when you're at that age. And
I almost feel the same way, you know,
with Barry Melrose. I'm like, I just don't want to listen to this guy. Like, he seems to me like old man yelling at cloud.
Yeah. So, I mean, we'll see what happens next year with the NHL moving to the ESPN. And, I don't know, like, what's going on with that whole ordeal. If people from NBC are going to be coming over to ESPN, vice versa, whatever. So it will be interesting to see. We know Butcher Gross will continue calling college hockey games. That's pretty much a given. But will Barry Melrose be in the seat next to him next year? I don't know. I guess we'll have to wait and see when the season starts up next year.
And hopefully there'll still be a Bucci overtime challenge.
Yeah, well, I don't think that will ever go away, even if he's not on TV.
One day for the show.
You know, Barry Melrose isn't actually that old.
Oh, I know. He looks a lot old. He looks more older than his age.
It's that slick back hair, man. It makes everyone instantly older.
He just sounds old.
And he's trying to continue. I mean, I'm a big mullet supporter. But when you add about 30 pounds of grease into it, it's just he looks like whatchamacallit from D2 Mighty Ducks for the head coach.
Wolf the Dentist Stanson.
Yeah. Yes. Looks like an older version of that. He wears all black suit and slicks his hair all the way back.
Man.
Or as Hans would say, looks, he used to get out of the shower.
Yeah. If you need grease for your bicycle chain, run it through Barry Melrose's hair.
I'm looking at his
his Hockey DB account right now.
Man, he's got a thick mustache
in one of these pictures, though.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Bigger than Coach Q?
Not like that, but it's like
definitely that, you know, he was playing in the 70s mustache.
Yeah, I think the 70s and maybe early 80s was a big mustache era, for especially for hockey players.
And Bermos is 64, by the way. So I guess that's old-ish, but the slick back hair, Wolf the Dentist Stanson-esque vibe sets off, makes him feel a little bit older.
I'm sending you guys a picture of this
mustache to the group chat. It's pretty good.
Oh, boy. We're going to react in real time here? Let's do it. Let's go. We're becoming those type of guys? I like it.
Oh, wow.
Oh, that is majestic.
Wow.
You is sure that a dead caterpillar on his face, or is that mustache?
Are you sure you're on a hockey website?
I guess you know why he only had he's only had 32 career points in the NHL.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of reasons for that.
I had zero. But...
I think I have negative two. Make sure there.
I'm still looking for number one. yeah, guys, circling back, Stick Taps, hats off to UMass, national champions, Hockey East, reclaiming their glory. So good for them, good for UMass and for the program. You knew they were due, and I think for myself included, you always wondered, was that team a fluke because they had Cale Makar, who was just absolutely incredible, I'm glad that they proved myself wrong. I'm sure a lot of others that this team wasn't a fluke, that even with Cale Makar dominating in the NHL, they still were good enough to continue being successful. And here they are, the national champions of 2021. So Stick Taps to that program. And I just read something too, that this team is still very deep, even after the season, with some guys moving on. So I'm really intrigued to see how they're going to fare in hockey's even next season, if this team is as deep as I'm reading about with the recruitment and everything.
Yeah, I think we're at a point now
you're going to look at UMass as being – and I think they've been kind of at that point for a couple years now where they're just going to be consistently one of those, you know, teams we see in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah. Now, guys, before I kind of get your thoughts on how the whole season, you know, kind of went and everything, I do want to bring up some unfortunate news that did occur right before the Frozen Four, I believe, out in Maine, where their head coach, Red Gendron, I might be saying that wrong, and I apologize, who suddenly passed away at the age of 63. So that team right now is going through a lot. As far as I can tell, one of their assistant coaches has stepped in right now in place of him to keep the program going, as far as I'm guessing recruiting and everything else. But really unfortunate for the University of Maine out there and that program and the university to lose their head coach very suddenly.
Yeah, it's so sad. And I mean, you never like to see somebody, you know, leave. That's such a young age, 60 years old. Prayers go out to his family.
And then, guys, I don't think we talked about it because I think it got announced in between Frozen Four and the National Championship. But Cole Caulfield, Hobie Baker winner, and Jack LaFontaine ended up winning the Richter Award. I think I already know your guys' opinions on Cole Caulfield, so I'm actually going to move over to the Richter Award. LaFontaine over Dryden McKay, was that a shocker or not a shocker?
I mean, that one to me was,
if either of them had won, I would have said deserving.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think it could have gone. I think you could have flipped a coin for either of them. That's how good of goaltending both of those guys were.
Yeah, there's no wrong choice there. I think between us, we talked both about a lot about LaFontaine a lot and Dryden McKay a lot. So I'm not surprised, but I was sort of like, yeah, I was kind of hoping for the Minnesota State product. But, you know, Jack LaFontaine, heck of a season too. So you can't fault him for that. So stick caps go to him.
Yeah. And we're definitely, I think, going to see both these guys in the NHL very soon. So yeah, like you said, Ryan, there's no wrong answer here. And same with Cole Caulfield. I think we kind of knew about midseason that this kid was winning the Hobie Baker. I mean, there was a couple of guys that were giving him a run for his money, but ultimately he ended up getting the votes and winning it, which well deserving. And you know, now he's off in the Montreal system, doing big things for Laval, or however you say that, Brian.
You were in the ballpark. I think, I don't know if we saw it too, but Jack LaFontaine is coming back for another year at Minnesota.
Oh, he is. I did not see that. Oh, good for Minnesota.
I saw that earlier, and I was like, I'm sure y'all beat me to the punch there. But yeah, he's going to come back for one more ride, it looks like. Yeah.
Did y'all see, like, how when Caulfield burned?
So basically he was watching the presentation of the Hobie Baker in his coach's room, a coach's office, and he watched it. Left, went out and scored his first career goal.
It's a good way to start your season.
Yeah. So I got a lot of questions over the last couple of weeks. If I thought Cole Caulfield would be up in the Montreal roster right away, I said no. I think even if the Canadiens do make the playoffs, I kept saying, let him sit in the AHL the rest of the season. There's like, what's the point of bringing him up right away? And let him, you know, in training camp work to get a spot next season. I see him kind of like Alex DeBrink. I mean, he's the same type of size. He's very quick off the first step. Got a hell of a wrister. I think we all know that kid just got a fucking cannon. How someone can shoot a puck that hard and that accurate from being like, what is he, 5'7"? Got to be like a 130.
Yeah,
I mean, it looks like it. But I also said this where, and this is more me comparing him to how he played in Wisconsin. He plays well when he's put together with good players. So, you know, that's why I think it's better for the Canadiens. Now, I should also preface that this is not a Montreal Canadian or NHL podcast, so I'm, you know, apologize for steering away a little from this.
I mean, it could be if we really wanted to.
I'll pass. But I just don't see him being a valuable player if you put him on the third and fourth line. I think he's got to be on the second line. I think that's the best spot for him. You put him with at least a couple playmakers, and I think that's where you really get all, you know, most of the juice out of him, so to speak. So that's why I just don't see. I mean, unless the Canadiens are completely out of the playoff race at that point by, you know, in the next couple weeks, and they have a few games and they say, let's just see what he's got, then yeah, I could probably see that, because then you know you're going back down if Laval, however you say it, ends up making a run in the AHL. And then just let him, you know, we'll see him next year. And I think we're going to see him in the Canadian uniform probably the beginning of next season, if I had to guess. So, but, you know, I think we all knew he was going to be moving on. But were you guys shocked how many guys ended up leaving Wisconsin? I'm a little worried now for Granato again.
Yeah, a little bit.
They'll get some other development
program guys in, and they'll probably have a down year next year, but they'll be fine moving forward.
Ty Emberson was another
one, I think. Him and
who was the other one? Weisbach, right?
Yeah, Weisbach, however you say it. Yeah, they ended up losing quite a bit of guys. So, but yeah, I mean, you're hoping that Tony Granato's gonna have a successful recruiting season, and they'll be able to back. I mean, I think the Big Ten's going to be very competitive next season. So, you know, it would be good to see Wisconsin continue getting better and better each year, and not go back to what they were last year, which was not good. And I think they're going to be successful, because with Cameron Rowe, I think he'll end up being, you know, the full-time starter next season. Yeah, he played great this year. Again, I didn't agree with the coaching decision in the playoffs to pull him, or not start. I mean, not start him and then put him in late. I thought that was a bad decision, for at least, especially for his morale too. So, but you know, that's why I'm sitting here and I'm not sitting behind a hockey bench. So, what do I know? I mean, just real quickly, guys, before we cap this off, overall, what did you guys, you know, what thoughts about this whole season, you know, anything that you didn't like? What, I mean, you know, Brian, I'll start with you first. What are your final comments on the season?
First of all, I'm glad we got an entire, I want to say a completely full season, but we got a fairly good amount of hockey being played, you know, November all the way up until late March, early April. So I feel like we all kind of took it for granted all those other years. Then we don't have a tournament last year. It's like, oh man, we're really missing this. So to have that back, tournament-wise and Frozen Four-wise, was great to have. You know, NCHC doing their pod to kind of, you know, in December was great to get a lot of games in. So I thought that was one of the biggest success of the season, was that able to work. And then getting a full, you know, almost a full slate of games. There are only a few, you know, shifts arounds and postponements here and there, NCHC-wise. But then overall, again, minus a lot of the teams that didn't end up fielding teams in the ECAC there, you know, it is what it is. But, you know, I think we can look back and go, you know, give or take a few games here that weren't played, we got a lot of hockey, and hopefully we're going to get a lot more and then some for the 21-22 season. And we started the pod off here. I'm sad it's over, but I'm already looking into next season to see what's going to be coming our way.
Yeah, I couldn't say it any better than that. Tony, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, like I said at the beginning, hats off to
everyone who made this happen. You know, that's absolutely incredible that, you know, we got to this point, given, you know, given the uncertainty at the beginning of the year. We didn't even know if we'd get to this point. So really, tip of the cap to all those teams. And, you know, I'm excited that, you know, we're going to get to see some of these players who are seniors come back for another year. I think this will be beneficial for a lot of them. I'm, you know, selfishly really excited for what Western has coming back with Pasalt, with Ethan Frank,
with Ronnie Adder deciding to stay. Who am I missing? Basalt.
Washi.
Oh, Washi, yeah. So having those three
or those four guys come back, I'm super excited because I like college hockey when the Broncos are good and I like their potential for next season.
Yeah, I'm with you. I really thought, you know, hats off for the NCAA and all the college teams out there that really got this season in place. And we got, like Brian, you said, pretty much a completed season. So, you know, I'm thrilled that we didn't end anything on a short cliffhanger note, so to speak, like we did last year due to COVID. So hats off to them, stick taps all the way. And I'm really looking forward to, like you said, next season. You know, the WCHA is gonna be gone, but we're going to have the CCHA coming in here. We got a couple new teams that are coming on board. I'm excited to see, you know, St. Thomas, who just hired Rico Blasi. So that's an incredible pickup for them. I'm excited to see how Hockey East, the NCHC, all these conferences. Hopefully we have full all the teams playing next year. Like the Ivy League schools skipping this year due to COVID. I hope they come back. I hope we have, you know, full conferences, full everything. I just want college hockey to go completely back to the way it used to be. We'll get some non-conference games next year in, more traveling. And I'm just excited for next season and what this is going to shape up to be. You know, for the seniors who thought this might have been their last ride, but the NCAA is granting those specifics people, those student athletes, an extra year of eligibility. That's awesome to see. I think that's a huge, you know, that's a huge thing for not only college hockey, but for the student athletes who, you know, unfortunately didn't, you know, lost a year last year. You just didn't know how that was going to get played out. So to get them an extra year of eligibility, that's probably one of the coolest things I've seen the NCAA do. And I expect a lot of teams, we just talked about Western because I sent the text out right before this podcast because I saw the notification on CHN. But you got to think there's going to be a lot of teams that are going to take advantage of that, and I really hope they do. And I think that's going to make next year even more competitive than this year. So this is going to be fun to see. And I'm already counting down the days to puck drop for college hockey next year. I can't wait. I'm already got my subscriptions for all my TV, college hockey providers renewed. So I'm ready to go next year, boys.
Also, it's going to be wild. The transfer
portal this year has just been going nuts.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about that. The amount of guys that are moving.
We can't keep up with it.
Yeah. You would have.
That's what it is. I was gonna say, I'm like, we should talk about this, but it's like, man, where we start or end, we'd be here for four hours.
Yeah, it was almost like an NHL trade deadline. There's so many moves and names being thrown in that portal. That's intriguing because a lot of guys, a lot of talented guys. I think we saw we're going to North Dakota, I believe. I think Tony, you might have texted us in the group that a couple just former starters somewhere else were heading to Grand Forks or somewhere.
I think it's somewhere, Dan.
It might have been the captain at
Bowling Green.
Yeah. So I mean, the transfer. Yeah, good call out. I didn't even think about that. This to see where a lot of these guys end up before next season starts. It's gonna be very interesting, and I'm kind of intrigued to see how that plays out with, you know, some of these names that you're used to seeing in one jersey are gonna be playing in a different jersey. It's almost like when your favorite player that you've seen play for your NHL team for the last 10 years gets traded at the deadline. it's weird. You're happy for him, but it's also weird to see at the same time. So, but yeah, guys. This was fun, Brian. I'm so happy that you're part of this now. You came on about halfway through. So we're happy that you're part of this, by the way.
Happy to be a part of it. Thanks for you two for putting up with me more than you have to.
And I'm just excited to get the season started off with you guys next season. This is going to be fun, and we're going to keep this going, and hopefully we're going to keep expanding the brand, the name, Hockey in the Classroom. And but I mean, you guys got any final thoughts you guys want to say real quickly before we
say thank you guys for a great season? Thanks to all the teams that were able to say we got a full season of hockey in, mostly a full season, give or take a few there. So mad props over from there. I'm looking forward to talking up with you guys sooner rather than later.
And I mean, not until next fall, but when it kicks off, as always, watch college hockey.
Classic Smith.